Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB Trades Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. We ask at the end of every episode for any feedback or future topic ideas you'd like to hear about. And recently we got an absolutely brilliant email from a 23-year-old woman named Tori. I love Tori. I'm so impressed with her interest in finance and investing at such a young age. I wish I was that smart. And she was asking about a topic that is getting attention for all the wrong reasons at the moment. That is agriculture. Australia is a major agricultural producer and exporter, and we have this idea that we came up on the sheep's back and so on. Hundreds of thousands of Australians are employed in agriculture, forestry and fishing, and those industries are worth about 12% share of GDP. Australian farmers and graziers own over 100,000 farms. They cover, I only found this out the other day, 60%-ish of Australia's land mass, which for a very arid continent is extraordinary. So it's big business, and what's absolutely critical is that agriculture is pretty much the defensive industry par excellence. It doesn't get much more important than food and being able to eat. Global population's predicted to grow to nearly 9 billion people by 2050, but it's not been an area that has been hugely successful for investors, right? Some people have done very, very well, some people not so much. Many risks, many variables that can destroy value. So how do we think about it from an investment perspective? Today, Mark Todd, Head of Customer Direct in NAB's Income and Investments Division, and hugely popular guest, always, joins me to talk about different ways to think about investing in agriculture. Mark, thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure, as always. Great to chat. I do love the idea of agriculture as a place to think about investments, because to some extent you're right. Whenever anyone mentions agriculture, they all think of the incredibly tragic drought and how people can contribute, you know, $5 to buy a bale and all those wonderful initiatives. You've had some recent pushback around criticisms from the farming sector of the farming brothers and sisters, and to be honest, I think it's easier to be critical. I think there are some real challenges in the drought spaces. You know, that's very, very hard. But if you think about it from an investment strategy, then you start to think, and NAB is the agri bank, you start to think of the rich quality of the farmers and the opportunities. And one of the ways to think about that, and I don't track equities, but if you think of Inghams as an organisation that are involved in the farming world because they're doing the chickens. And so we've had some businesses to deal with counterparties to Inghams, and it's sort of opened my eyes around what the opportunity might look like if you just think it's not just beef and cattle and cotton and farming, it's, you know, it's chickens, it's fishing, it's all sorts of things that play into the agri space, and whether it be the processes of food, whether it be the people delivering the food, there's more to think about rather than just saying no. And I think that's, you know, you shouldn't just say no straight away because an opportunity arrives. You need to work out if it fits your portfolio. But there's definitely some work being done on the roundup in terms of the agri sector. And I noticed that First State Super are in the public forum around buying the business of Proten for in the mid 300s, and that was a chicken opportunity. They've bought that. Yeah, that's now in the public forum because they wanted to be in the agri space. That's the roundup. It's chickens are a fragmented sector, so people think about the way that will round up, how that will be worked out, and I guess, you know, to the point I think we're going to talk about is the demographics and what happened. You're seeing the change in land usage, meaning that the farming space is changing. So for the people who live out in New South Wales and think about what the land around the second airport looks like, well, it was all dairy. Not now. You know, they're airtropolises and there's, you know, schools. And so, okay, what does that do to the land that was being used for? What those products? Well, chickens are the same thing. You used to be able to have a chicken farming, which now on the edges of, you know, cities, Well, they're now in development. So that space is now becoming much more industrialised around how we deliver really cheap protein to people. You know, it's all good things.
So, Mike, you're absolutely right. I think this is, it's such an interesting area to talk about. It was one of the reasons I wanted to pick up Tori's idea. My husband did his first work experience with a stockbroker. So this was a long time ago. And the old stockbroker wisdom is never buy anything that eats, floats or flies. Right? Too many variables you can't control.
But they would then say, buy BHP.
Yeah, you go and buy things where you can dig it up out of the ground. I think it's hilarious in a way. I mean, Qantas investors have done just fine buying things that fly.
Sure.
It's a useful adage to the extent that it does articulate in a pithy little way the fact that you've got a load of variables you can't control in this field. And then the really huge variables, you've got weather and climate change. Weather by itself is problematic enough. I mean, farmers for time immemorial have worried about whether or not they get the rains, and if they don't get the rains, what that's going to mean. And, you know, if floods are the alternative, there's drought and flood and God knows what else, bushfires and everything else. Climate change is a macro issue that needs to be addressed separately, but increases the risk of weather patterns being more problematic. Mm. My father works at sort of the extreme end of agricultural technology, and he said every conference he goes to, they don't talk about whether climate change is a problem. It's like, this is a problem, how are we going to deal with it? So it's very much a factual issue in the science community, if not so much in the political community. But all the other things you have to think about. So long before climate change was on the radar, we still had to worry about whether or not you could make money out of agriculture or make it consistently. Mm. So commodity prices globally, you've got global supply chain issues. So it's great that you can produce your crop, but if you can't get it to the people who want to buy it, you've got a problem. That relates to issues like spoilage and so on. If you can't make those issues go away. Now we've got tariffs and protectionism. They used to be very big. They're coming back in a big way. So Australia has this climate problem more so perhaps than some other countries just because it's so arid here, but so many different variables that are far beyond the individual's ability to control for, right? Mm.
How is that different from a dam in Samarco breaching and BHP being subject to the ramifications, the atrocious, horrible experiences?
Yeah, the horrendous consequences that occur there.
How do you, if you think about your investment strategy, how do you tell me that you know all the variables around a BHP and when that, and I remember reading that somebody said in 20X, 13, whatever, there was a report on that dam that people hadn't seen. And I often think about, if you can tell me you know all the variables as it relates to BHP, I think you're a much smarter man than I am.
I think with that example, but I think that's a governance issue, right? So they were aware of some of the risks there.
Well, we don't know that they're aware of it. We can't make that. Well, no, we don't. We definitely don't know that they're aware of it. I'm saying somebody said there was a report. I didn't say.
Ah.
I saw a report. Somebody said there was a report. Mm. And I think we can look in hindsight and say maybe there was and therefore we should read it. But that's not the point I guess I'm trying to make. I'm trying to make it's not sure. I am not sure that agri fits everyone. I'm saying that if you look at the defense around, okay, because of climate change I'm not buying agri, okay, that just creates an opportunity for somebody who's prepared to do the work. And so then you ask, what are the variables? And I go back to my chicken. It's the cheapest protein, it was in Adelaide, the best grain, it's part of a Roundup strategy. What was necessary to make the Roundup work? What are the drivers of the business? So if I look at it from that perspective, I start to understand a bit better. Now, I do think, I'm not saying that agri works for everyone. I'm saying start thinking about what fund manager might be good at it. What is the trend in? So when we talk to the really, really big institutional investors, they often say, not often, but some say, the short-term risks are always heightened and the long-term trend is missed.
Mm.
And to that end, if you say the long-term trend is the following, people need to eat protein in some way, shape or form, or people need to do something in some way, shape or form. You start looking for those demographic changes. So land, we're getting bigger. We're not going to have less people. So land usage is going to go a certain way. So it's this idea that who feeds into this demographic shift. So how do you then think about it? And I don't want everyone to go out and try and find an agri opportunity. I just want everyone to open their mind to the possibility and then look at an organisation like Aningham's, like Seafarms, like these listed companies and say, what is your pitch?
Mm.
Rather than, oh, it's agri, let's just put it one bucket that it's we don't
touch. Don't buy anything that eats.
Yeah.
That was the question I was coming to. Is it too risky, or do we look for opportunities in it? Because to the point that you're making, the demographic tailwinds are insane. You don't see demographic tailwinds like this anywhere, that we are going to be adding a population of several billion people over the next 50 years. Those several billion people are going to need to be fed somehow. They're also going to need to be clothed. And within those trends, it's not merely the fact that there will be more people, but people are eating more animal protein than at any point in history. So people, as they move out of poverty in developing countries.
If China eats beer, drinks beer, we're in trouble. I get it. I get it. So I do think it's risky. It is absolutely 100% risky. But Tori wanted to have a chat about agriculture, and I'm saying, I recognise in a risk of if it's non-risky is
but someone's one. Someone's going to make money out of it, right? Because people are going to eat.
So if non-risky is one, this is much closer to 10.
Mm.
And as a consequence, it becomes in your portfolio a question of leverage. So if you have $100, you might put a dollar on the one at 10 because you want to have a balanced portfolio. And you might say, you know what? I think this is happening around this type of fund manager, this type of part of the agricultural movement. I think this might be worth the one, and on the basis of demographics, roundup, those sorts of things, industries that are fragmented and are changing. So if you look for that trend and say, okay, that sort of makes some sense to me, I can understand that if you said I put a dollar on that basis, I wouldn't say that was a dumb move. I do say I'm challenged by the move that you go, I'm not going anywhere near that.
It's okay, too hard.
So where are we now? How are we then reducing our universe? So we want to go overseas? Well, no, I don't want to do that either, because I'm not sure about trade. And so if you live in the fear of, I'm not sure the lift will get me downstairs, I have no certainty in everything in life, then you probably wouldn't want to invest in anything, stick on cash, but then you'd worry about somebody paying back the cash. So I think it's about trying to fit a portfolio that suits your needs and at the same time think about what's the long-term trend rather than all the worries will mean I can't really invest on any of these things. And I don't have a specific opportunity, but we have been looking a lot more at the agri, and for some of the sophisticated customers, we've seen some opportunities, and to be honest, it looks credible. And we've had one trade that we've done as it relates to a farming enterprise, and that on the face of it's working out pretty well. So we say to the clients, do not put all your eggs in that one basket, but at the same time, this was their business strategy.
No pun intended.
No. And it's and for that one, it was finding the right fund manager to help execute. I think of it in some ways, it's like a private equity strategy. When you go into private equity, what are they looking to do? Take advantage of, good management, an opportunity to change, industry changes. So that's how I'd look at it, and then say, does it fit that paradigm? If it's, you can buy this beautiful piece of land and it'll always have rain, well, okay. I don't know if we're going to make that case.
So it's worth for people listening who aren't hugely familiar with that. And to be frank, I know some areas of agriculture reasonably well and some not at all. But you can break it down into fairly substantial subsectors. So you've got crops with food crops like wheat and barley and so on. Barley's in the top 10 for Australia, right? There's a lot of livestock feed in the cropping area as well as actually human food. And then you've got other crops like cotton. We've got horticulture and viticulture. Viticulture's a bit of fun. So we all like that one. And animal products, which are becoming increasingly interesting when you consider how much more demand there is for animal products as people come out of poverty. So you've got beef, lamb and pork people are, as they So a huge amount of research, and the trends are very clear that as people come out of poverty, they move from primarily vegetarian diets to starting to increase their meat consumption. Mm-hmm. And chicken used to be seen as an inferior good. That was the way we learned about it in economics, yeah. An inferior good. So if you were poor, you would eat very basic diet, often rice, wheat, corn, whatever it might be, then you'd move up to chicken. And then as you got richer, you would move on to red meat, sure, products, not chicken. But as we all started worrying about our hearts and saturated fat, we stopped eating so much red meat. So in first world countries, that doesn't hold true anymore, but it does in developing countries. You've got dairy, you've got fisheries, and you've got non-food products like wool and leather as well. So you get this whole variety of different products,
yep,
that are produced in various areas within Australia and different types of agriculture. How does an investor try to break them down? I'll tell you how my husband does it, which is basically, I like wine, and therefore I think viticulture is by far the most interesting
bit. So if you think about it, it's the same thing. So what's your long-term trend? So what are you thinking about? What's happening to wine exports and you know, all the different organisations that will try and play into that space? I guess to an extent, you often say to people, think about what you know. You know, like try and get some information around what's the consumption looking like. What are the trends, and try and define what's the threat to that trend, and will that change? The other way that I want people to possibly think about it is around infrastructure.
Mm.
So what's the trend that's necessary to support that? So are you talking, you know,
buying Caterpillar and John Deere.
Well, but also the logistics of cattle yards. You know, are you looking at people that build that infrastructure, and therefore can you buy into their opportunity? Or are you thinking about people that are taking wine to places? So are you looking at transport who are aligned to that sort of stuff? It's the way to think about much more strategically around their specific wins that they can deliver. So what is the opportunity that plays into the farming space, the agri space, that isn't related to just the product? It's the infrastructure necessary for the product. Is it the fertilizing companies? Is it, you know, it's that way to start thinking much more strategically, rather than saying, you know, I like wine, I'll buy, you know, my local producer. Yep, but who's making great strides into, you know, China? What's that trend into China? How's that been performing? Do I keep that on my radar, and do I say I'm investing in agri via that opportunity? So what are the, I keep saying the same thing. What are the trends? What's the business case? Who's prosecuting that business case? Is it somebody trying to sell it to you just to sell it to you? Or is it the producer, or is it a fund manager? It could be a manager. And they're all equally fine. I have no problem with any of them, but they just need to make an eloquent case, rather than everyone is going to drink more alcohol. No, that's not the answer.
But more people drink
infrastructure is really interesting as well. And that's where I thought Ingham's is more about infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, moving away from holding land to, you know, being, I'll give you the food, I'll give you the chicks, I'll take it and I'll process. And I'll process in an environment that is, you know, RSPCA approved, and that sort of thing became much more interesting to me, learning from that experience to say, what are these trends? What are people doing?
So there's two things I want to unpick there, because I think they're really interesting. So one is the wider trend that people are trying to grab a hold of and run with. One trend that NABTrade investors love, and they're not unique in this, is the rise of the Chinese middle class and the rise of the Chinese consumer. And that's not just a story about agriculture. So, you know, people moving to higher quality textiles, and I don't mean just buying luxury goods, you know, just simply being able to buy cotton and wool rather than having previously to rely on whatever local production was available to them. Their food preferences are changing toward more higher meat diets and so on. But
Very slow. But because of the size, it doesn't have to be that big. Do you know what I mean? Like if
it can be a slow change when you've got a billion something people.
So if they had a slow change on buying some sort of meat product and it was a vast percentage of people, yes, it has a huge leverage effect.
So the one that our investors love is it's about a perceived quality issue, right? So the Australian goods, Australian food products in particular, are perceived to be much higher quality than Chinese products. The most obvious example that everybody knows is the baby formula examples. There was a horrific case in China some years ago where there was melamine found in the Chinese baby formula. Many children died, and therefore many Chinese consumers will not consume Chinese milk products, and particularly baby formula. They will buy Australian produced goods, and it's been a big story here for a variety of reasons. One is investors love it, and the other is that it was quite difficult to get on Australian shelves and all this kind of stuff, so it became a big issue. A lot of our investors have loved that story, and they have bought Bellamy's and A2 milk as a result of that and ridden that wave. Mm. Are there other trends that are similar that you think might present those sorts of opportunities in the future?
So is that the trade of, are you, to some extent, are we thinking about that as the trade of governance? Because to the earlier point you mentioned the idea of governance, and is the consumer more comfortable with our governance model that leads to, you know, people, you know, buying? Okay. We had some live cattle complete disasters.
Mm.
But to an extent, that's, I think there's a lot of work being done to solve that, because if you look at going into the Asian belt with some of the cattle exporting and that sort of stuff, I think if we can get that right, and I'm not saying that we are going to, but if I think if we can get that right, it's around proximity.
Mm.
And so if we can get our governance right, then our proximity to Asia becomes really attractive to the export of goods. So
a story that we were telling on a recent podcast is that Asia will have four of the world's five largest economies by 2030, which is 12 years from now, right? So that proximity point is very important.
And so there's this idea around, can we control our own land mass through, you know, what's the acquisition story? Because people are looking to protect their own food distribution.
Food supply, yeah.
And I look at that and I think, okay, to my mind, it's how we export rather than if we will export.
Mm.
So if we can hit into that governance piece. Now, I can't then point to somebody and say, that's the one you should buy on that basis. But that trend of governance around exporting to our doorstep sort of makes sense. So you think, if we get that right, I need to know that we're getting that right, who are the beneficiaries, and then start making your own decisions on those investment strategies. So is that an agricultural business looking to take some of their product out? Absolutely, 100%. And so what's available on listed? Is there anything in the form of fund managers? Is there anything in the form of property? You know, it's that whole idea. We're definitely at the gateway, but we've got to get that governance piece right. Because then
that the quality point's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, because then it's just it's the quality, it's the delivery thereof. Mm-hmm. And it's the comfort that we are doing the right thing around, you know, living souls, you know, animals, and we have to do the right thing as well. So, but there is a will to get that right.
Yeah.
And I think there is going to be missteps across the way, but if you talk to the people in farming, they don't discount the criticism entirely. They don't say that that's wrong to be critical. They are suffering the burden of legacies and saying, how do we all adapt as we modernise, you know, physically, how do we adapt? Mentally, how do we adapt? What do we need to create so that we've got the right environment? You know, if I hark back to my chicken analogy, the RSPCA approval process and all that sort of stuff became part of the investment strategy. And these were sheds on a mass scale that were modern, that could produce the type of environment where chickens could leave and, you know, roost. You sort of looked at it and thought, that is a very technical approach to give the right outcomes. How do we create it automated?
Yeah, so ESG issues getting factored in. A lot of that is due to the consumer as well. Ironically, if you look at Walmart and some of the cheapest suppliers of goods to consumers in the world, they are focusing very heavily on improving quality outcomes and ESG issues, because they have to from a consumer perspective. They've all got organic goods and all these other things on their shelves now and are increasingly seeking them because they believe that that's what they need to do for consumers.
Yeah, and I'd also like to think that some of our people who are producing are also ethically aligned. So it's not just because my customer wants it. Yeah. It's because it's the right thing to do as well. So I think there's an evolution on how we engage with our communities all the time. And generally, it's pretty good, it's quite positive. So I think when I talk to the farming belt, and I do talk to them, they're all saying, okay, how do we do it better? Mm. How do we protect the land better? What do we do? What, you know, how are we utilising solar? How are we doing these different things to evolve so that it is really sustainable? Because they want to have, they do want sustainable businesses.
Mm.
And, you know, and they don't can't think they can the just shift a river into their land. That's not the way they're thinking it. Well, I can't speak for everyone.
Yeah.
But the people, the NAB customers are trying to think, what's the long-term solutions and how do we make sure everyone understands agri is a much more diverse opportunity rather than just, it's only one thing.
Mm.
Aligned to, you know, the impossible pain of drought.
So there are two things I'm going to pick out of that. So the sustainability question, but also align it to the technological innovation. So there's innovation in two parts. One, very small stories. I'm not 100% certain how you would invest in these. I think that they're kind of micro stories, but classic examples of where producers have found themselves unable to take their goods to market for one reason or another, and because they're primary producers, and so they've chosen to step further along the production chain and create innovative products and bring those to market and have been very successful with those. So one that I love was a carrot farmer, and they were having a lot of trouble selling their ugly carrots, right? So they had ugly carrots that weren't straight and pretty, ready for the supermarket, and they had to dump all the ugly carrots. And the wives were saying, this is just stupid, right? Don't dump them. And so in the community, they got together, put together a little factory, and they had all the carrots cut up into kids' snack packs and sold the kids' snack packs, which is a great way to avoid dumping the product.
Sure. That's great.
The other one that I love, and I buy this product. Yeah, War on Waste is brilliant. The other one that I love, which is in the same vein, and again, I find it unlikely you'd be able to invest in it directly, but great example of farmers being really innovative and thoughtful about their product. Banana farmers in Queensland, who had exactly the same problem where they had to dump bananas that were too green or weren't the right shape or whatever it might be. And there's all this research about green bananas, believe it or not, being incredibly beneficial to the body because they're very high in resistant starch. So they started taking all their green bananas that they previously used to feed to the wallabies out the back, basically grinding them down into a powder and selling green banana resistant starch all over the world as a health food. So it's very expensive health food. Believe me, it's in my cupboard. Great stuff. Beats the hell out of throwing out your bananas. But I love these examples of primary producers thinking about different ways to use their product and bringing it to market in innovative ways. They're, as I said, micro stories. But I think there are more and more of those.
Well, it's also that. Okay, so that's, I guess we're going to wrap it. It's also, again, that's just the infrastructure. In what store do they sell it? And how does that, so if you think about, they're all incredibly complex. But if you look at somebody like a customer we've got is Charter Hall Longmail REIT.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a property play.
Mm.
It's got really long, that's what it is, it's long leases.
Mm.
When you look at some of the customers that they're having and as they play into the infrastructure of agri, taking the produce that you're talking about, getting it totally automated and delivering that product in snack packs to people, you say, well, I think because of the product coming through, the tenancy will be paid because I like the story of the product. Therefore, I'm going to buy Charter Hall because they're going to give me a 6% return.
Mm.
That's how you start thinking about the interconnectedness of infrastructure, product. If I can't buy the product, how are they selling it? Who are they selling it to? What store is it? Is there something aligned to it? It's, you know, you don't have to do all this because you'll never get to work. But you can start thinking about agri in a different way rather than just the one thing. That's the whole point of, you know, the conversation today.
So you made a point about finding people who can help you find opportunities in this space. And I think what's most apparent is there's a huge range of subsectors in this. It's it's like saying technology, buy technology. Mm. Like, sure, should I buy Facebook, Amazon, or, you know, some little specky thing? You know, there's a pretty wide range of choices out there available to people. It's a complex area. There's a lot of A lot of questions you've got to ask before you get to an opportunity you want to invest in. Are you aware of any fund managers who specialise in this area?
It's one of those. There's one of those things where you get, you know, we skirt so close to this idea about being an endorser of somebody, and then finding that that might not suit everyone. So everyone's got to go and get their own advice.
Of course,
let's take that as given. That's absolutely given. But we've been doing a bit of work with a company called AAM as a fund manager, and they are. I like the conversations I have with them. So I think they're not publicly listed, but I'm sure you can find them on Googling and just have a chat to those guys to say what's happening right now. They aren't available to everyone, and that's absolutely true. But, you know, it's worthwhile thinking about those organisations. I think if you're a member of First State Super, you know, as a big industry super fund, just have a look at what they're doing in the agri space. I think they do a really good job. So that might be, you might be having people here who are members of that start looking at the portfolios they're putting together. You know, you might be able to align yourself to some of their initiatives. So there's two that stand out. It's not, it's not an endorsement of either, but I find it interesting to talk to them when they talk about agri, and it's made me think more about how the opportunity would look. And that's been a revelation probably over the last year, 18 months, where, you know, the drought has got worse, and I'm thinking about the poor souls, and at the same time looking how everyone's throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and you go, well, that's interesting.
I think on that also, so NabTrade investors have access to a whole variety of research tools, and there is research on there. So if you look to any of the listed entities that do work in this space, and there are plenty of them, right? If you want to go and have a look, there is research on those individual companies. There is a bit of bottom-up work you need to do on that, so you'll need to do your own research on each of the companies. As I said, Bellamy's and A2 Milk have done very nicely. Thank you for our investors. Treasury Wine Estates has done very nicely.
Yeah.
And yet, if you'd gone into a new farm, for example, you would have had a really different experience.
So on the three that did well, do you think people feel they're investing in agri?
No, I don't. But I do think they, for Bellamy's and A2, you know, it's milk. The story is milk. Mm. And so they understand that it's a food product, and you're not getting that food product from anywhere other than a farm.
But it's also, that's
Riding the trend.
Yeah, and that's also about governance. So you're trying to work out why I'm investing. It's governance. It's the opportunity, the size of the opportunity. It's that sort of stuff. So I think that's, they're good lessons to ask. You know, what's the opportunity? What's the barriers to entry? What's the business suggesting is the protection of their moat? What are they trying to do? And how much of it relies on other people, you know, pulling off the rabbit out of the hat? It's another agri type thing.
The rabbits. Yes, we'll see if we can deal with the rabbits. Maybe not a moat, maybe a rabbit proof fence. Mark, any final thoughts for people who want to go down this path?
Oh, just take your time. I mean, I think the opportunity will be available for plenty of time. Get comfortable around some of the themes. You don't invest until you actually feel really happy, and do not put all your money to work on these sectors. This is just a conversation around thinking about it, but think, you know, it just helps you get more balance in your portfolio rather than just following so many people. It's the four banks, it'll be Telstra, it'll be, you know, just, I'm not saying they're not good investments and they've done well from dividends, but just think about, you know, when everyone wants to push something, just pause, take a breath, think about, does it suit you?
Mark, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure.
As always, thank you so much for joining us in this episode of Your Wealth. We always love to hear from you. You know from this episode that we do take it very seriously. We love your feedback and suggestions for future topics. So please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.